Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, host of the program, also a father of five, broadcasting from my basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado, trying to salvage a little faith, family, and freedom at a time when the Western civilization, the Christian, European, Western way of life is disappearing. And we're chronicling these events on this program, one of the most interesting times, I think, in all of human history. And we are the unique individuals that are sitting on the front row of the demise, the big demise. Dave Buhner also in studio with me, and we're going to draw from a few stories here this morning, and then we're going to head on to a few other important things that are happening in our generation's ministry. But first of all, Dave, here's a Christian school in, I believe it's Connecticut, it's Hartford Seminary, and they are teaching, this is again a Christian seminary, a congregationalist denomination that was out to prepare pastors and Christian ministers for service, been around since the 18th century, meaning the 1700s. Hartford Seminary is now launching a new graduate certificate for imam education for the Muslims. That is, they're preparing Muslim clerics for the Muslim faith, which is an interesting switch for a Christian seminary.
Well, maybe the congregationalist number of schools are down, and so, you know, they're going where the market is.
Well, yeah, I think you have to. There's obviously the Muslims are doing well. They're having kids. They have a vision for the future, something that the existentialistic, materialistic Christians haven't been doing for about 150 years, at least if you're in the liberal end of, say, the Congregationalist Church, for example, would come to mind.
They're having the population bomb.
Yeah, they are. They are. You walk into these churches, it's just a bunch of old folks, and they've all had 1.1 kids per generation, and that winds up with a pretty serious population implosion as the years go by. And, of course, nobody can really remember why we were Christians to begin with. You know, that Christian faith, that old faith where you shall have no other gods before me, Jesus is the only way, the truth, and the life. That was that kind of religion kind of passe today in a polytheistic, pluralistic age. But it is strange that they're bringing one more form of monotheism in and trying to get behind that. Of course, you know, the monotheists, the Muslims are a little pig-headed about their religion, too. They're not real hot on polytheism.
They don't like pigs, so they can't be pig-headed.
No, sorry.
I figure, though, if you're going to be a Muslim, you want to be an imam. Because the imams don't blow themselves up. They get other people to blow themselves up.
That's a positive. That's a positive. I'm not sure if they're teaching jihad here or not, but I guess maybe that's next year.
Well, it's a graduate school. I assume they are.
Yeah. Okay. Also, this is kind of a sad story, Dave, and I'm not going to cover too much in the details of this, but it's a Christian school teacher, Bible class teacher, Adventist Academy, where the teacher worked for 2 years, apparently is being accused of third-degree child rape with a teenage student. And the sad thing about this is we read these stories often, how public school teachers are engaging in all kinds of sexual activity with their students. But now Christian schools, private schools, I'm seeing just about as many stories with the Christian private school sector in relation to child rape and child sexual activity as I do with the public schools, which means I'm not sure that the Christian schools are doing all that much better than the public schools. Stories, folks, that were not being read in the 1950s and 1960s. And it's true that, I guess, among some Catholic schools, these things were happening. Now it's happening in public schools. It's happening in private Christian schools, Protestant schools. I think we're just seeing this sort of thing happen all over the place, which is very sad, which means that public education, institutionalized education, the kind of education that involves an anonymous teacher sitting up in front of 25, 30 anonymous students and engaging in some kind of bureaucratized, institutionalized schooling will apparently more and more lead to child rape and sexual activity. Fits right in, of course, with a platonic dream for schools as well, something we've mentioned a time or two on this program. Now, one more story before we take the break, and that is that this is from WorldNet Daily, a very interesting story. Apparently, 2 out of 3 abortion clinics have shuttered their doors over the last 20 years. That's right, folks, 67%. Most of the abortion clinics are out of business since the 1980s, 2 out of 3. But guess who is keeping them doors open and they're expanding their businesses right and left? You'll never guess, Dave. You'll never guess who's doing really, really well in the abortion business. Let me give you a hint. They're funded by our tax dollars.
Planned Parenthood.
You got it. Or Planned Parenthood or whatever. Planned Parenthood's doing really well, folks, and they're doing well because of your tax dollars. That's right, $300 million plus going to Planned Parenthood and every single year. And, you know, you collect that. Let's say you collect $300 million over a period of 10 years. That's $3 billion. That's a lot of clinics. You could build a lot of clinics with $3 billion. Let's say that every clinic costs about $2 to $3 million. That would be That would be quite a few. That would be, let's see, $2 to $3 million per clinic. $3 billion, that'd be 1,000 clinics. You could build 1,000 clinics over 10 years. With that kind of money. Folks, your tax money. Let me make this perfectly clear. It is your tax money. Thanks to Richard Nixon first, but then Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush, they all signed those budgets. Nobody made a stink about it. Nobody vetoed budgets until they denied, Congress would deny Planned Parenthood funding. Did not happen. Year after year after year, 30, 40 years in a row. The thing that keeps abortion going in this country, friends, is your tax money. And so far, I guess everybody's okay with that, because I continue to see people voting for Republican presidents who are just A-OK with Planned Parenthood funding. That's what's happened over the last 20, 30 years, my friends.
And, Kevin, it looks like it's going to get worse. In the new health plan, the brand new health plan
Barack Obama's
pushing forward.
Right.
At least from the office of John Boehner, who is the Republican minority leader, he claims, and does a citation here, that $1 per person insured per month will go to the abortion industry.
A buck a month, friends. If you're going to be part of the socialist healthcare big deal that Barack Obama is trying to bring through on a budget, I believe it is, Dave, now. They're trying to get it in a budget bill or something. They're just going to attach it to some other bill, I don't know, get speed bumps in parking lots across America, or some bill that's is supposed to be an ordinary average bill. They're going to try to attach it to that bill and get it squeezed through.
Typically, they would attach it to something like a military spending bill, you know, something like send sandwiches to the soldiers, and if you don't vote for it, you're voting to starve the soldiers, something like that. But I don't know what they're going to do. It's clear that they want to do something because they want to fund abortion and apparently euthanasia also. So we're going to see your money. Your money is going to actually go more of it to killing babies and killing old folks.
Okay, but again, folks, let's put this into perspective, and that's what I want to do on this show. We've got a lot of crazy things happening in public schools, private schools, Christian schools. Abortion is all over the place, and we continue to see this scourge across this nation, largely funded by your tax dollars. And this a problem for us, and yet I want to come back to this sterilization issue that was happening in 1925 when people were being mandatory sterilized by state governments. It was state government policy that some of these people who did not have the IQ that apparently the planners, the people that were in charge wanted people to have, these people were sterilized by the government in the 1920s. Now, today I guess they don't have as much of a problem with this, but back then there was this forced sterilization issue. And it passed the Supreme Court by an 8-1 vote. That's right, 8-1. The Supreme Court of the United States said that we are going to enforce sterilization upon these people. What was it? Buck versus Bell was the court case in which a woman who, by the way, had a child, and that child that she had, she apparently had an IQ issue that was under the whatever the mandatory limit was, but her child did not have any problem whatsoever, and yet the state enforced a sterilization upon this woman, sustained by the Supreme Court of the United States, and one of the justices wrote, "Three generations of idiots is enough." Dave, what kind of an elitistic person, what despicable person would ever write anything so sick as some guy who says three generations of idiots is enough? We are going to mandatory enforce a sterilization upon this poor woman in Indiana.
Well, that was Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr. So you see what kind of elitist. It's an elitist with four names. But this is what he writes. This is I think, actually shocking. This is 1927. Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., who is the Supreme Court Justice, writing for the majority, 8-1 majority. "We have seen more than once in the public welfare may call upon the best citizens for their lives. It would be strange if it could not call upon those who already sapped the strength of the state for these lesser sacrifices, often not felt by such as those concerned. In order to prevent our being swamped with incompetence, it's better for all the world if instead of waiting to execute degenerate offspring for crime or to let them starve for their imbecility, society can prevent those who are manifestly unfit from continuing their kind. The principle that sustains compulsory vaccination is broad enough to cover cutting the fallopian tubes."
Well, there it is. Oliver Wendell Holmes, my friends. A man who wrote three generations of idiots is enough. We're going to mandate sterilizations on these poor women in Indiana. By the way, Hitler copied some of his initial laws that mandated sterilizations in Germany during the Third Reich after the American state's policies. Okay, so you had this kind of stuff happening in America. In 1925, you had, of course, the Scopes Trial, in which the conservative fundamentalist Christians were concerned not so much about evolution being taught, but the fact William Jennings Bryan was mainly concerned about the fact that you had eugenics in these 1925 high school textbooks. This was the concern. This was the thing that was raising the ire of people who still had some modicum of principle at that time, and that was people like William Jennings Bryan. He said, you know, the fact that you have textbooks, high school textbooks in America that promote eugenics and state that the white race is the highest of all races and ought to be preserved and all other races ought to die out. These sorts of statements were being made in these textbooks that were being taught in the Tennessee high schools at that time. And this was the problem, of course. Of course the liberal media, of course the ACLU loved this stuff. They love eugenics. They've always loved the most horrific things that have ever been foisted upon mankind. Liberals have always wanted these sorts of things. And the end result, of course, has been that horrible, horrific things have come through nations like Germany. Not necessarily through America, thanks be to God, and thanks to be to some conservatives and some Christians that stopped the rise of progressive eugenics during the 1920s. We have not seen it quite as badly as some nations like Germany. But my point being today, folks, some of these things have come and gone. Some of these evils have come and gone. Eugenics, to a great extent, did come and go. And it's unpopular today to say, wipe out the black race and the white race is superior. I mean, thanks be to God, this kind of heresy has been purged from high school textbooks. But again, public schools and schools that will not fear the true and living God have always brought horrific things like abortion, like euthanasia, like mandated sterilizations, like socialism and big government imposition upon every aspect of our lives. These things have been taught and promoted by public universities and public K-12 schools since day one. And of course, we've taken a position against this, this sort of thing. But again, we need to ask a question. Whatever happened to mandatory sterilizations? Whatever happened to Hitler? Whatever happened to Stalin? They're gone. These things are gone. Whatever happened to Christians being tossed into the lions by evil characters like Nero? They're gone. Nero is dead. Nero is gone. Whatever happened to cannibalism in the New Hebrides? Gone. These things come and these things go, friends. And I think to a great extent here, Jesus is playing whack-a-mole. You know, Dave, the game whack-a-mole, where you get some kind of an evil that pops up its evil head, and we got to hammer it down. The good people, those that follow Jesus Christ and acknowledge his law as the absolute standard, have to pummel those things down. But then you get the whack-a-mole. You get another mole that pops up over here, another mole that pops up over here. And we see this kind of thing with abortion. We see this kind of thing with the teaching of homosexuality in the public schools today. And you know that one day homosexuality in the public schools will not be taught there anymore. You will not have those sex ed classes being taught in those public schools, just like you don't have sterilizations, mandatory sterilizations happening in Indiana right now. You don't have this idea that the white race is a superior race being taught in high school textbooks in America right now. Why? Because the good people stood up and they corrected these evil things. And I think it is important that we stand up and we correct and reprove the unfruitful works of darkness. We have to do this. We have to do it generation after generation after generation. And friends, wake up and smell the coffee. You're never going to be without an opportunity to stand up at some point and reprove the unfruitful works of darkness. Well, folks, things are going to be changing as the years go by, and we want to talk about some of the changes we're going to see in the upcoming generations and in how we can prepare our children, how we can educate our children for the years to come. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Kevin Swanson.
Folks, we are in the middle of the greatest recession since World War II. Unemployment continues to rise after 22 months of recession. Will the national bailouts and the massive redistribution of the wealth into irresponsible banks really help the situation? Will John Maynard Keynes' fractional reserve indebted system work out in the long run? I mean, he didn't think it was going to work in the long run. If you're a Christian father and mother, and you care about the future of your children and grandchildren, I'm telling you, it's time to work on Plan B. That's why we're doing a Family Economics Conference coming up here on March 5th and 6th, 2010. This will be a hands-on practical conference bringing biblical perspectives to bear in every area of family economics. We're talking work. We're talking family entrepreneurism, debt-free living, contractual employment, inheritance, being a faithful employee, taking care of aging parents, living without Social Security, which, by the way, will happen, saving and investments, retirement, family charity, education, mentorship, taxation, health care decisions, seeking employment, raising dominion-minded daughters. We have found the best speakers in America who have studied and written on biblical family economics. It's time to work on Plan B, my friends. If you have a family and you are living in the American economy today, you need to check out this Family Economics Conference on March 5th and 6th, 2010. Check it out at kevinswanson.com. That's kevinswanson.com. Check it out now. Welcome back, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, and today talking about whack-a-mole. Whack-a-mole for Jesus. And Jesus is really doing this whack-a-mole thing, Dave, from generation to generation. You know he's coming after evil things, and he is bringing every enemy under his footstool. I mean, this is the Acts 2 agenda. This is what Peter has said Jesus is doing ever since he was raised from the dead, and he's on the right hand of the Father, and he's there until he brings all of his enemies under his footstool. And sure enough, they pop up here, they pop up there, and really that's what history is all about. History is about God bringing down the pride of men and destroying the evil that pops up its evil head here and there and everywhere throughout the history of the world. This is what the world history is all about, and I believe this is what we need to teach our children. In other words, Dave, I don't know if we need to be all worked up about the problems in the sense that these problems are going to be here forever. We have to remember that abortion is going to go the way of the Etzel. I'm sorry, the way of disco. Abortion will go the way of forced sterilizations in Indiana in 1925. These things do go away eventually. Eventually, communism does come down. Social Security will not exist anymore. Massive government spending and redistribution of the wealth, the Marxism, the harebrained schemes of Karl Marx and Jean-Jacques Rousseau will be gone. Gone, gone, gone in another 100 years, my friends. They always do. Now, of course, they will be replaced by other demons, sometimes seven demons worse, and that's not good. But Dave, I mean, again, I think our goal with our children is not to set their hopes on what man is doing, but to set their hopes on what Christ is doing and bring his word to bear wherever they are on planet Earth, whenever they are on planet Earth.
And not only will they be gone, but they'll be an embarrassment. They'll be like the leisure suit.
Well, yeah, look, you know, Darwin. Darwin in the year 2200, people will laugh themselves silly. I mean, they'll say, people believe this stuff? They believe this the stupid theory that somehow a rock turned into a human being by pure and absolute chance, and they never even had a mechanism for it? They never found a fossil record, never found any evidence for it, never found a mechanism for it, never defined a mechanism for it, never tested a mechanism in a laboratory, never established any scientific evidence whatsoever, and people actually believe this stuff, and they built museums, and they put trillions and trillions of dollars into educating almost every developed nation and evolution back in the 1900s. I can't believe it. People will be laughing themselves silly in the year 2200 because of what Charles Darwin did with his natural selection harebrained idea.
They probably will. They'll be laughing not even that long about anthropogenic global warming. People believe that? The hockey stick? The story of the three trees. The three trees, right?
Based on three trees, that's right. And they threw away the 40, 50 trees. They had a little more evidence than that. But based on three trees, that's right. They developed the hockey stick, and then they shut down all of the manufacturing, and they caused about $6 trillion of damage to gross world product. They adjusted all the civil laws in about 150 different developed nations, all based upon three trees, yeah. People will laugh themselves silly about the kind of science that was done in 150 years ago in the year 2200.
But Al Gore got an award from Hollywood. He got an Academy Award, I believe. And didn't he get a Nobel Peace Prize, too?
I was at Barack Obama. I can't keep track of all the Nobel Peace Prizes these days. Well, anyway, folks, the fact of the matter is these systems that we have come to admire, these large, large empires that have collected all the power and the strength and developed their educational systems based upon ideas that are far, far, far removed from the fear of God, all of these things will come down. And Dave, this is kind of the pattern that you see in history. Men
builds their empires. They build their towers and they come down. They develop their literature, they develop their science, they develop their educational systems around their empires. But as the empires come down, pessimism takes over. And so this is, of course, what happened, folks, after the fall of Rome. There was almost no education because man had become so depressed that he didn't know why he wanted to educate for anything. He had no projects in mind. He didn't really want to build much of anything. However, there were some exceptions to that rule, and that was Patrick. And that was what was happening in Ireland. That was what was happening in the missionary movement in Scotland and through Northern Europe as Europe was being evangelized and discipled by means of a Christian education through monasteries and through these Chaldean churches that went all the way through Northern Europe. So we have, I think, a great possibility for wonderful things to happen in the future. And, of course, the humanists call this the Dark Ages, Dave. Once Rome falls, this is the Dark Ages. This is when everything's depressing. This is when nothing's happening except, of course, the evangelization of Europe, except, of course, the building of churches. And the Christian church becomes the strongest church in all of Europe, the strongest faith in all of Europe, and the strongest it's probably ever been in the history of the Christian church. That was happening between A.D. 450 in the fall of Rome and roughly 1100 as Rome, the Church of Rome, began to centralize control and bring back the city of man into the city of God in the 1100s and 1200s. But up until the 1100s, you had the development of a very powerful church, a very strong church, decentralized church, of course, but a wonderful church, a Christian church, where people were really being educated and discipled in the things of God. And these, of course, are the Dark Ages as far as the humanists are concerned. And then, of course, in the modern age, we get the 1200s, 1300s, when man, the humanist Renaissance, collects its force again, and then man develops his empires, and you get the Spanish Empire, the French Empire, the English Empire, and the American Empire, and all these empires, of course, are dying, are falling away, and they will be nothing in another 100 years. They will be gone in 100 years. With all that said, Dave, okay, with all of these changes that come and go throughout history, what do we teach our children? How do we raise our children? What kind of education do we use? And the first thing I tell people is do not use the education as formulated in the City of Man. Please, do not use Plato. Do not use Aristotle. Do not use the ideas that come out of humanist ideals. Put aside the great literature of England, the great literature of America, the great literature of the Greeks, of the Romans. Put those aside. Don't read the Ciceros, first and foremost. Don't read the Greeks. Don't read Shakespeare. Don't read Dickens. Don't read Alcott. Don't read these great writers that have produced literature for the city of man, for the building of a city of man, sans God. Go find the greatest Christian writers who have ever written anything, who have been building the kingdom of God step by step, brick by brick, over 2,000 years, and use that literature. Dave, this is why we put together for our family, and we're sharing it with other families as well, the Christian Curriculum Project and the great Christian classics of all time. We have another Christian classic study guide that's coming out for the five of the most remarkable narratives of the Christian faith. I mean, ever written. I'm talking about narratives that bring out the lives of the greatest Christian men. And these were written as testimonies. I mean, this is the heart and the soul of the men who did some of the greatest things for God in the history of the world, largely ignored by public schools, by universities, yes. They're largely not taught by Christian schools. We understand that because they're not important to your average world history curriculum. They're not important to the English Empire and the American Empire. But they are important to the rise of the kingdom of God, which is happening right now, folks, and continues to happen all over the world. I mean, lead, follower, get out of the way. God's kingdom is doing stuff. So, Dave, we put together five remarkable narratives, and I've read these to my children, and it was amazing. As we read these, we climbed into the hearts of these men. I mean, I'm talking the greatest men, the most remarkable men, the men who entered some of the most challenging territories in this world's kingdoms, and they brought the kingdoms of Satan down. I'm talking about guys like Patrick or John Payton out in the New Hebrides, where cannibalism and Satanism pretty much prevailed for 2,000 years. This guy brought those kingdoms down practically single-handedly, but he did so with incredible faith in God, and that comes out in his autobiography. So what we did is we took five of these, the greatest books, the greatest personal narratives, autobiographies ever written by godly people. Now, this is only for Christians. Okay, now, if you're listening to the show right now, and you say, I'm not a Christian, I am a Muslim, and I want to find good Muslim literature, or I'm a humanist, or I'm a Unitarian, I just want to read Emerson, Thoreau, Dickens, Alcott, I'm a humanist, I want to read humanist stuff. Okay, that's fine. That's your worldview. I don't think it's the right worldview. But if you're a Christian and you're listening to the show right now, we're putting together stuff for Christians. the best books ever written in the history of the Christian church, written by the greatest men in the Christian church. In this case, we pulled together personal narratives. And Dave, I just would highly, highly recommend this resource for those who want to pick this up. It's available right now at ourgenerationswithvision.com.
Yeah, Kevin, part of the problem we have is that some Christians will look and they'll take an education approach. They call it classic education. And to them, it means studying things that are old that have survived. But that's not really a Christian or classical Christian education. That might be a classical humanist education. And we still believe that the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. Now, to a certain extent, Jeremiah 6 says, you know, consider the old ways, the old paths, where the good is, and walk in it, and there you'll find rest for your souls. But that's only if the good is there. You know, being old isn't good by itself. Being old and good, that makes a Christian classic. And so if you can fill your children's education program up with that which has survived the test of time, and that which is good by God's definition of what is good, things that are rooted in the fear of God, and things that are help build up the fruits of the Spirit. Now you're giving your child a godly education. And, you know, our goal is not to get our children into Harvard. Our goal is to get our children into heaven, and let's never, ever forget that.
And Dave, a lot of this old stuff is just more empire building, and there's a lot of frustration, I think, in the hearts of men when they see their empires come down. And this is why reading the Platos, the Aristotles, and the Shakespeares is really a frustrating endeavor, because you know that what men are building in their kingdoms will always come down, but what God is building in his kingdom is there forever. That's why you ought to give your children an education in the sorts of things that will never come down, in the empire building, the kingdom building that God is doing through his people, through missionaries, through great theologians, through great writers like John Bunyan or St. Patrick or Augustine or John Knox or John Payton. Folks, these are the autobiographies that we're covering in our new Christian Classic Study Guide for juniors. It's a little simpler than the one we did earlier for the seniors, and again, both for junior high and high school level, but folks, I would encourage you to grab these books. We are printing the books in one compendium. So the autobiographies themselves, the testimonies themselves are in one compendium. You can get that as well at our website, kevinswanson.com. And I would recommend these to you. These are men who worked hard to raise up the kingdom of God out of heathendom, paganism, statism, humanism, ecclesiastical compromise and decay. Every one of these guys worked in the face of unbelievable danger, including persecution, imprisonment, enslavement, the devastation of war. These are the patriarchs. These are the pioneers in the Christian faith that has built the church from the bottom up in places as far-flung as Africa, Ireland, Scotland, England, and the South Pacific. Again, I want to encourage you to get these resources at kevinswanson.com. Use them for your families. I believe that this will construct a great education that will stand in good stead for the next 100 years, 200 years, 300 years, with all the changes that are coming to Western civilization, folks, and to all around the world. It is time to give your children a good, solid Christian, classical education. You've been listening to Generations Radio Broadcast, friends, and you can get all the resources at kevinswanson.com, where you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world, at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.